until late yesterday afternoon about this request for this entire situation. We immediately in touch with Ray Pecunier to look into this and to see what could be done. When I got home last night at about 8:30, I had a call or a message to call Milton Marks. I called Milton Marks, and this is what it was about. He was interested in this, and I was able to tell him at the time that we were already on this matter, and we would know very shortly, hear back from Ray Pecunier. During the course of the evening, the boy's condition worsened, so instead of waiting until this morning, as of 11 o'clock last night, the action was taken, and the man has been there and visited his son.
You did ask the director, after you found out the fact, to let the
we did that. No, we did that the minute we heard it. We told him, and Ray Pecunier took the action within the department and reported back to us that he was taken to the hospital last night.
Pecunier do this at your request?
We simply told him to get into this and report back. This is this type of situation. It's not as urgent as this particular one, but similar types of situations arise all the time. After all, you've got 21,000 men, 9 institutions, and it's a matter that is handled administratively within the system. And when this was brought to our attention late yesterday afternoon, immediately through Jim Jenkins, the cabinet secretary in that whose area comes corrections, and through him he relayed this to Ray Pecunier. Ray Pecunier got on it and reported back that he was getting to make sure the entire situation was as it had been presented, and that's the way it turned out. He made the decision and informed us that the man had already been released when he found out in checking all the details, found out that the boy's condition had worsened, and the time was the essence. He took the action at 11 o'clock last night.
Another subject, Governor.
What?
Have you finished reading the White House transcript?
No. I'm still at them, and I was set back this weekend when I thought I would have time to make a bigger dent in them by forced reading regarding some of our own problems here. Oh, I don't know. I'm way into April someplace. Yes. Well, very little change since the last time we spoke. As far as I have gone, apparently the questions that were called for in the original demand have been answered. I think many have agreed that he did not have knowledge, the President did not have knowledge of Watergate in advance and was not a party to the cover-up.
Governor, are you reassured of that after reading as much of the transcript as you've read?
Well, the statements in those earlier meetings, I think there were statements there that made it rather plain that that was true, and others have also reported that in the media regard to those. But I would rather not get into commenting on specifics as far as I went. I said that I felt they all should be read all the way through, so you've got the whole picture, and I'm going to continue to do that.
Have you talked within, say, the last 2 weeks with either the President or Vice President Ford?
No.
From your reading so far, it indicated the President had no knowledge of the Watergate breaking itself in advance, and he was not a party to the cover-up. Were you in any way disturbed by the March 21st tape, in which it could be interpreted as suggesting that the President wanted to pay off E. Howard Hunt to keep him from talking? Did that disturb you, that scenario?
Well, as I recall from reading from that one, and then as I say, I don't want to comment on these things piecemeal. As I understand, the matter came up there that Howard Hunt was threatening the revelation of national security matters to which he was privy where the others weren't because of his previous connection with CIA. And this presented an unusual problem that had to be dealt with. But subsequently, as you go on in there, you there were statements that indicated that the president was definitely against blackmail or against a payoff or any clemency idea. But again, as I say, I'm
where
not going to...
Where does he find that? I mean, what part of the language of the March 21st state makes you...
Oh, no, no. This goes on beyond 21st then in the subsequent meetings where this is further discussed, this same matter. But again, look, I said I'm going to read them all. And I'm going to read them all, and I'm not going to comment till I've gone through and found out what it says in the last chapter.
Governor, the president's guilt or innocence aside at this point, were you disturbed by the general nature or tenor of the discussions?
Well, there were... here again, this whole matter is now, and I associate myself with the leadership of the Congress as of this morning, yesterday, they have made what I think is the proper point. The constitutional process is going forward. All of this will now be considered by the Congress. And I think this is what should happen, and I hope for as early a settlement or a solution as possible by the Congress of this matter. This is the process that should be followed. If there is an impeachable offense or impeachable conduct, then this is the obligation of the Congress to find it and take action accordingly.
A lot of people take that same position, Governor, but have felt free to comment about the sort of conversations that took place, as revealed by the transcript. Now, you occupy a certain position of moral leadership in this state, if not in this country. Don't you feel an obligation to comment to some extent?
Well, I think I also, in that same context, have an obligation with regard to a legal process, just as I've stood here before you many times and refused to give an opinion on a matter that was before the courts. This is now in a legal process.
How about your fellow Republicans who have come out? How do you feel about them? Who have called this?
Well, every individual's got to take his own position on this.
Governor, in reading these transcripts, which obviously were never, no, the president or the people who were in the White House never thought they'd be released. Have you had reason to rethink the way you conduct your own conversations in your office? And have you started to maybe hold back a little bit or whatever?
Well, no, we don't tape. No, we don't tape. Obviously, everyone has his own way of doing business, and maybe mine would have been different than what someone else has done.
Your own reactions. Obviously, we members of the press are quite interested in what you think about the transcripts and the entire Watergate thing. You're being asked questions constantly. I'm told that some of your own advisors are suggesting that you put more daylight between yourself and the president. I wonder if you could tell us what your reaction is to this, how you feel.
Well, I'm at a pretty consistent position, and I'm going to stay with it. No one condones Watergate. I don't. I think it was illegal, it was immoral, and incredibly stupid. The perpetrators, the actual perpetrators, were arrested at the time. They've had their day in court. They've been found guilty. They've been sentenced. Now the question is, were there others involved who had escaped trial? Indictments have been brought down so that some are in the legal process before the courts, and therefore I don't think any comments should be given now. The other process involving the president is the impeachment process the Constitution calls for. And it is now, in effect, going forward. And if an impeachable offense is determined in that process that an impeachable offense has been committed, and then if it is later determined by the Congress that there is guilt in that impeachable offense, then the process will be completed. An action will be taken. If innocence is found, also that will be determined. And I have, for a long time, held out that this is the course to follow. That I, when I said I associated myself with the Democratic leadership, to those who have been talking resignation, I don't think resignation would solve anything. It would leave everything unresolved. And quoting the Democratic leadership of the Congress, they said, and just contribute to more misunderstanding and polarization of the people and do nothing to restore the confidence of the people in their government.
How do you view that rising clamor for resignation?
You'd have to ask them. individual about this. I've made it plain, and if we were talking about a president of the other party, I am opposed in principle and philosophy to the idea that a president can be forced out of office ever simply by accusation or indictment. And there is a constitutional process that our government provides for this, and it is now in operation. Somebody had exerted some power to halt this and not utilize that process, then we would have a reason for real concern. But the process is going forward.
Governor, do you have any reaction to last night's field poll that shows Comptroller Flournoy is now ahead of the Lieutenant Governor?
Well, again, I think this is just a reflection of the troubles at the moment that the Lieutenant Governor has, and I can't comment on that because, again, any kind of a comment, and I erode my position of neutrality in the primary.
You say a reflection of his troubles. You mean voters are reacting, seemingly.
Well, I assume that this is what has caused this this thing in the polls recently, and I think it was to be expected, and I'm quite sure it's no surprise to the Lieutenant Governor.
Governor, to the... to what you said previously, that the Lieutenant Governor should remain in the primary race, or have you changed your opinion on that at all?
Well, again, I can't comment on that.
Legislative analysts recommended pay raise for state employees in excess of 8%, considerably more than what the State Personnel Board has recommended. Do you think he made ample justification for that suggestion?
Well, I don't think that he's had time to go into this as exhaustively as the Personnel Board. After all, in our system here, we get back to the processes again. Under the law, we have a personnel board and a very competent and experienced large staff that is to deal with these problems. I don't know exactly about what the legislative analyst based his percentage. Now, if he was leaving out fringe benefits, then we're virtually in line with each other, because the personnel board, if you add in the fringe benefit package to the pay raise that was recommended, it comes out to better than 8% and comes out to just about the equivalent of what the legislative analyst was proposing.
Well, your administration or the party official has been reviewing the law to find out what action would have to be taken in case the Lieutenant Governor is found guilty.
Nominated
as far as his nomination and his candidacy?
Well, all I know is that if you lose a candidate after the primary, the State Central Committee under the law chooses the candidate for the party.
And if he is convicted, will he leave the ticket if he is convicted?
No, I've had no conversation with him about that. Well, let me put it this way, I would.
In other words, if the Republicans today in the Senate, Senator Biddle, wants to offer some amendments on that bill, are you ready to take that bill in the form he would like it, or only in the way you want it?
Oh, no, we're not a hard and fast. This bill is now a compromise in which I'm quite sure the author of the bill doesn't have all the things he wanted in it, or he put them in the first place. We, obviously, in compromising with him, haven't gotten all the things we would have liked to have gotten. And, this is what the legislative process is all about. Let them go forward, and we'll look at it when it comes down, if they've succeeded in making additional amendments.
You committed some of your forces to talk to Republicans, I understand, to try to hold them in line on this bill?
No, not that I know of.
Stated our position.
We just stated our position that we have worked and negotiated out a compromise and agreed with the author that on the basis of that compromise, we could sign the bill. Now, if additional amendments are made, those will just have to be looked at to as in any other piece of legislation when it comes down.
Would you be willing to give up either one of those? Or?
Well, the appliances was not something that we were particularly happy about ourselves. As I say, no one gets gets everything that they want in a compromise of this kind.
Consider the local government preemption necessary for the operation of the bill?
Well, in this particular thing, the local governments themselves believe that the only way we could get power plant siting was on a statewide basis.
Isn't CSAC opposed to it on that basis?
Well, now, I don't know whether they are, but I don't think on that point, not on that basis. I know they've had they've had some points in there that they object to, as everyone does. But we found very few that are overall against it. The main point is, and what we were trying to get, and what we've been trying to get for several years, is a power plant siting bill so that we can build power plants in California. Right now, it's impossible to build a power plant. And one of these days, we're going to be faced with the brownouts and the blackouts that they've had in the East. We've not kept pace with our growth. You remember it's been almost a couple of years ago that Los Angeles maintained an office in the East where they tried to help industries locate in California, has closed that office because the power situation in California was such that they no longer could, there was no point in trying to encourage an industry to come to California. They couldn't guarantee them power.
You actually take that to mean you would give up the appliance provision, but not the local government preemption?
Well, then you're getting into what's the very heart of the bill that all of us want, which is power plant siting. In other words, if you take out the siting of power plants, you've taken out the main reason for the bill.
On another subject, Governor, in your amendments yesterday to the budget, Bill, you're proposing to add $30 million more to the capital restoration fund on top of the $40 million already appropriated. Now, they haven't even touched the original $40 million. The legislature hasn't decided yet what they're going to do yet. Why the urgency to add another $30
million? Well, because what we have is an additional amount of Tidelands oil revenues over and above what had been anticipated due to the energy situation. Now, customarily, we've used the Tideland oil as capital funds, and therefore for capital construction. And I don't mean that in the sense of this capital. I mean in building projects, one-time expenditures, using one capital asset for another. And so with this additional money, what we took upstairs was a laundry list of projects in which we earmarked how we felt this money should be used on a priority basis. And the original 42 prior to this additional money was enough to get started, but not enough to complete the things that have to be done here, including what I think is the number one priority, which is the restoration of the old wing of the Capitol here, the main Capitol building. And so that was one of the items, was to add an additional $30 million to the $42 million for Sacramento Capitol construction.
$30 million, bring it back up to about the figure that Senator Collier had originally about a year ago. He originally had about $80 million.
Well, no, and we've not earmarked this. This is just earmarked for construction here in the Capitol. Now, many of you have already been writing about the fact that there's been an increase in rental space by government here in Sacramento, that more buildings are needed. There's now $72 million in the fund for construction here. And the use of that will be subject to open hearings and a determination then to the legislature in public, after public hearings, so that the public is aware of how it will be used, as to whether it will be used for new buildings, for this building, or what it will be used for.
Money could be used for some non-legislative buildings in the Capitol area.
That's going to be up to them after the hearings. Right at the moment, they're the ones who seem to have put forth the first and most prominent claim that they need additional space. But again, there's been no resolution of that, because there's been no resolution as to what's going to be done here in this building, or whether they would move some, say, the executive branch out of this building, and suddenly you'd find yourself tagged for an executive building instead of a legislative building. So that's going to result from the hearings and the legislative process.
Do you have any personal idea whether they should just build a separate executive building? Have any thoughts on that, whether they should operate the two branches in the two different buildings?
Well, if that is what would follow restoring the old Capitol to use, that wouldn't bother me a bit, because my top priority, I feel, that the top priority is to restore and make usable again the old Capitol. Now, if that could meet the legislature's needs then by moving the executive branch out, that would be one of the things to be determined by the legislature.
Have you decided how you're going to run up that line?
No, as a matter of fact, we're having meetings in a few days. We'll have for you our decision on all of the propositions.
Some time ago, Mr. Livermore was sent to make an investigation of the reorganization of the Division of Forestry and the firing of the state foresters. Has there been any report made on that yet?
No, they're continuing to work on that matter, and we should be having a report shortly on that.
For a minute to Lieutenant Governor, in all your past statements, you've been very supportive of him in defending his integrity and so on. Yet today, when I asked you whether you still felt he should remain in the race, you said you wouldn't comment on that. Does that indicate some sort of a change in your attitude?
No, you were talking about, I thought you were talking about in the context of after the primary, and if he were the nominee, if
right now
you were found guilty. Oh, no, I have said before, I can't comment. This is a decision that he has made. I can understand that decision. And as far as supportive is concerned, nothing has happened to change my mind about his integrity. I've never found him anything but a man of integrity.
Any more questions?
I just want to know. Governor, you had said in the past when you were opposed to lowering the voting age to 18 that you didn't like the idea of politics coming on the campus. Is that correct? Did you say something
like
that? And why last week did you sign a bill which permits deputy registrars to go on high school campuses 4 weeks of the year?
Well, because this is a permissive bill, but also because the matter is now changed. The 18-year-olds are voters.
The bill says registered voters shall be allowed to register students and school personnel on any high school campus. The last 2 weeks in April and the last 2 weeks in September.
Yes, but maybe permissive is the wrong word to use for it. What I meant was that they shall be allowed. This doesn't mean that we passed a bill that ordered registrars or voters for separate 2-week periods to go on the campus and sit there and register. It means that if they want to come on in these periods, that the principal of the school cannot arbitrarily rule they can't go on the campus. But this is part of what follows. The 18-year-olds are now citizens, able to vote. What I was talking about was that all of these things would then become matters and problems. I don't think that registering voters is necessarily the kind of politics I had in mind. I had in mind the actual campaigning, and it is taking place on all the campuses, and I'm quite sure is going to step up as time goes on.
Thank you, Governor.